Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No.
We're going to teabag fight instead.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's another fine episode of The Session. And we're here to bring you a bunch of good craft beer talk. And by we, I mean me and the folks at More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com right now, and they have absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home. They have ingredient kits. They have recipes. You can do anything like that. They have equipment. They have books. They have wine-making stuff. They have coffee roasting stuff. They have mead-making stuff. They have everything that you guys need to ferment most anything you can think of at home successfully. And that's really the key, successfully. They have the knowledge and the people to back it up. So check them out, morebeer.com. All right, we are joined today by Chris and Bailey from Crusader Brewing. You can check them out at crusaderbrewing.com. Boys, welcome to the show.
How's it going? Hey.
Not too bad, man. Not too bad. It's look, it's a little warm in here. It's 81 degrees, so, you know, I'm really struggling. What about you guys?
Yeah, no, I got solar, so I crank the AC here.
Bro, let me tell you a story about solar. We got solar, Tesla solar, because it was cheap, and you know, look, I like Tesla, and they were doing that. The install was great. We got the power walls, like the battery packs and everything, and these motherfuckers go, oh yeah, okay, well, you know, they're here for the inspection, and they go, we're going to submit the paperwork today to PG&E, so follow up with them in a week to like kind of put pressure on them because they can drag their feet. That was 6 weeks and 4 days ago,
yep.
And Tesla has not submitted the paperwork.
Yeah,
and so they haven't submitted the paperwork yet. So I'm sitting here holding the bag. Like, I've already paid up front, already paid for it. I can't use it. I mean, I can't turn it on. I mean, I could turn it on because it's a battery system, so I could. But I'm like, I'm a rule follower, and I can't do it. I'm fucking pissed. I'm livid. Because it's
if
like
you push this button, it'll turn your whole system on. You'll stop paying for electricity, but don't do it.
And it's different because I have a battery. Like, I understand, like, if people working down the line, if the line is off, they need to know that there's no power going to it. I get it. But anyway,
And so I'm just upset. It's going to be 7 weeks here coming on. I think like Thursday of this week. It's going to be 7 weeks since I paid for this stupid thing. I can't use it. And then so they go like, oh well, we have a lot of orders. We just have a lot of people. You know, we're like onboarding new people. I'm like, that's not my problem. It's paperwork. I'm like, how embarrassing is that you guys are 7 weeks delayed on paperwork? Like, that's pretty. Yeah. Disappointing. And then PG&E's telling me they're 40 days out trying to even send people out. So I'm like,
man. Good news is Elon's an avid listener to this show.
Yeah, right.
So problem solved right there.
I would love to talk to him. I would love to interview Elon. He's like, you know, one of those white whales for a lot of podcasts.
Yeah. Golly, he's interesting. Freaking
yeah.
Joe Rogan, man. Freaking, was he like three God. Times in the last 6 months? Ever?
I don't know. He's weird. I heard recently on another podcast that he comes from an emerald mine family in South Africa. Like, his dad had an emerald mine, and they would literally have a safe full of money, and any money that would fall out of the safe as they closed it, that's what the kids could keep. Imagine that's your upbringing. Imagine that. Now look at you. You're sitting somewhere with 110 degrees, and you're like cranking the solar, and you're like, man, I just did back-breaking labor. And this idiot is just shoveling, as a child, shoveling money in his pocket, going, well, it doesn't fit in the safe. What else are you going to do with it? Leave it for the help?
I got to take all the $1 and $5 bills out of my pocket before I get home, because my wallet's too fat.
Well, but maybe it's a culture. Maybe it's just like a South African thing. Maybe that's just how they live.
Yeah. Maybe it's not a rich white guy in South Africa owning an emerald mine thing.
Yeah.
He would take emeralds and then go to New York City and like sell them for like spending cash. Just normal stuff, normal child rearing stuff. But enough about Elon Musk.
Money.
I don't know. Whatever. All right, boys. So, Crusader Brewing. Right away, I go, you guys need to do a collab with Heretic. I think that would be very funny.
They've already Wort Wrangler and some of the like Instagram accounts have already picked up on that and put some like memes out with And we had been open for like 6 months, and nobody knew who we were. And they like tagged us and said, the last thing a heretic sees or whatever. And it's like a crusader thing or whatever. We're like, well, that's funny. So
that is very funny, man.
Like I said, that was, Jamil's, his podcast was instrumental to us opening and figuring like, I think we can actually do this. We can actually go and make the move from homebrewing to professional, or what I guess I wouldn't even call it professional, just
semi-professional
commercial brewing, I guess.
Commercial brewing. What's the difference between commercial and professional in your mind? Why do you draw that line?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You make a living doing it?
I don't know. It's okay. Like a difference between being like a cook and a chef. You know what I mean? Like there's like a chef is, that's like a title. It's like something that's got, and I'm just, maybe someday I'll be a professional brewer. You know what I mean? But right now I'm just trying to like, keep the doors open and make good beer and, see where it goes from there,
I think you're too close to it. You need other people to call you a professional brewer.
Maybe that's what it is.
Because like for you guys, I imagine, starting from scratch, building everything yourselves, and we'll get into the story in a little bit, but like, you're too busy to think about what you are. You're just, like you said, trying to keep the lights on, trying to keep making good beer. And that's all you got to do. Who cares what you're called, I guess. But, for the purposes of this show, you're professional brewers.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. So, which one of you started the brewery, Crusader Brewing?
We're partners.
You're pointing at each other. So it can't be both of your idea at the same time.
Our wives knew that we both wanted to do this separately. Our wives used to work together, and they arranged a way for the two of us to meet up. And
that is adorable.
Yes.
Yeah. It was so subtle too. Cause it was like, hey, Chris, Ashley tells me that you're into like craft beer that you brew at home, that you homebrew. And then, so I kind of started, ranting about homebrewing and how much I'm into it. Mm-hmm. And then Ashley, my wife, is like, Bailey, you know, Jessica tells me that that you want to do something in craft beer too, and then
open a homebrew shop,
or whatever it was. And so then it was kind of, I was like, hey, you want to come over and start brewing? And so we started kind of brewing pretty much every Saturday for a while, and then we kind of were like, yeah, you know, it's
a year. We did it for almost a straight year.
We did it for a year.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Maybe this is something that we can do. You know,
we can work. We work well together.
Yeah. So sometimes
it's definitely, it sounds like one of those things where like, you know, the wives are talking like, look, we're really good friends. Our husbands need to be really good friends. And then we can go on like trips together and we can have barbecues together and stuff like that. And then it would just be great. And then now they're probably going, oh my God, what did we do?
What have we created?
What did we do?
That's actually a real thing. Yeah. No, it's like, oh God, they're there all the time. You know, like it's just all, it's everything is the brewery and, you know, all kind of stuff like that. But I mean, it's something that I'd always wanted to do. Not always, but you know, I started homebrewing when I was 19 because I went to Europe and I could drink at 18, and then I came back to the States and I couldn't legally, but I could go buy all of the equipment to brew my own beer and drink. So that's what I did. I started brewing beer so that I could, you know, drink at 19, and started with meads and then moved to beers and just continued it as a thing, you know, since from the time I was 19 until we opened the brewery and I was 35, I think, like that. So yeah, something like 16 years I was homebrewing.
Wow.
You know, sold all my stuff and moved to, when I moved to Europe or to the UK for grad school, bought more stuff there, homebrewed there, sold it, moved back to the States, and then bought more stuff and started homebrewing again, and just kind of kept it up as a hobby on the side the whole time. So
wow.
Yeah.
Well, cheers to your wives for getting you guys together, man. I mean, it's pretty cool to have supportive spouses like that.
You
did at one point. Yeah
right?
Now it's like, you guys should really sell the brewery.
Now we're now we're married to each other, and our wives, we had to cut our wives out. So.
Hey, look, it happens, man.
Little do they know.
Yeah. And where are you guys located?
We're in Bakersfield, California.
Bakersfield. Yeah, you are in the oven. The oven of California, man.
Yeah, it's hot. it's hot, and all the fires, like we get all the air and everything like that down here is.
It's brutal, awesome. Man. Yeah, it's brutal. That can get super brutal. So how did you guys? Okay, so you guys hooked up because of your wives. You guys met that way. What's the conversation about starting a brewery? Were you guys tasting each other's beers? Or was it, you know, Bailey, did you tell Chris, hey, man, this would be cool to do for a living, or vice versa? Or how did that conversation start? I'm always really interested to hear that about that spark of the idea that actually came to fruition.
See, I would say that I tried Chris's beers. I did brewing on my own and with a buddy of mine sporadically, not nearly as dedicated to it as Chris was or is. Then when we got together, I talked about how I wanted to open up a homebrew supply shop because we didn't have one here at the time. Or I was looking into doing a brew on premise, which I always thought was like an awesome idea, and have people brew and make their own beers and stuff. And I kept, every time I would do these things, I would find reasons why I didn't think it would work, especially for the Bakersfield market where property's cheap and people make more money than they know what to do with sometimes. so it's like getting into the bar to getting into brewing is pretty low here. The accessibility is there. And we only at the time had three breweries in town for a city of 400,000 people. It seemed like we could do it. We started making beers for local homebrew competitions and festivals and stuff like that. And we would take the beer to the festivals and we'd move through the whole keg or two kegs or whatever we're bringing. My dad's a very avid beer drinker, as you could put it. And he's him and Chris's dad's where we got the money from. So we started bringing beer to them, and at some point they just were like, you guys need to do this. Like, what are you guys waiting for? And So
I think that's what it was. It was all those like those thought distortions, those like mind, like those excuses of like, well,
oh yeah,
you know, it's a huge risk and it's a lot of money and it's this and it's, you know, it's all this, all these reasons not to do it. And like, I don't know if I know enough about brewing and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And so I Bailey was like, well, I want to do this like with or without you. Well, I'm going to do it with or without you. And we had run the numbers on doing a homebrew shop or a brew on premise or something like that. And it's like, you can't make any money.
No, nobody knows that you can't make shit. No,
there's no money in it on that for that thing. And it's not like there's a ton of money in, you know, brewing, at least at our stage, you know what I mean? Anyways, but you know, like, I think the only way we can make this work as a partnership is, you know, we keep our jobs. And I was a police officer at the time. You know, Bailey was working for the county here. And so the only way that we could make it work and make it viable was to do the actual brewing thing. We felt like we had a good enough product and we entered in competitions. We won some medals. We, you know, like you said, we did festivals and we got really good response from people that didn't know who we were. And didn't care. Like, it wasn't us drinking our own product and being like, yeah, man, this is great. Like, you know, cause we made it, you know, like, yeah. Or like our wife or
somebody, my dad.
Yeah. Or whatever. Just like, you know, like,
right.
People that were, you know, I like craft beer and this is good beer. And so at some point we were like, all right, we have to figure out a way to make this work. And so that's, we started looking into it and we hit up a real estate broker here who's really involved in the craft beer scene and a lot of charities that works with craft beer. And we started looking for a place and then
talking to banks,
talking to investors.
Okay.
And kind of one of those deals where it's like, well, do you have any business experience? No. Nope. Like, are you, you know, is there nothing? Okay. You get nothing. Like nobody would touch us. Nobody would give us any money.
Yeah.
You know, we were getting like a full on system, like in a, you know,
well, how much property deal do you have to be able to back your idea for this brewery? I don't own property. What property? I don't own
our
property.
House, my house and my, a car.
The house that right. My children live in.
Yeah, you can have my debt. That's, you know, there you go. Right. Like,
yeah. So. Excuse me, sir. This is America. Nobody has anything. Right. You so, know what I mean?
Found that out week one of the pandemic, and Cheesecake Factory's like, we can't do this. Yeah,
that is very scary, like realization that I think a lot of people came to early in the pandemic, where it's like, if these large companies are asking for loans, what are we supposed to do?
Well, yeah, and it's like, and people don't realize sometimes that you know, especially for us, you know, but for smaller businesses, especially, there is like, we don't have a safety net yet. Like, we don't have a savings. Like, we put all of our money into growing our business and paying our employees. And we're the first ones to take a pay cut. And the business is the first thing to get, you know, to get the money that we make in order to keep it going. And there's super tight margins. And when things start sort of, you know, go off the rails, it's, you know, it's scary. There's not a lot of wiggle room. So, no. I mean, and that was, so we started out with this grand idea of what it was going to be. We were going to get, you know, like a 7-barrel system. It was going to be this premier stainless, you know, skid mounted, you know, semi-automated, blah, 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 this many containers and doing this and whatever. And then, you know, you were wanting to, you know, $500,000 or whatever it was and couldn't get it. So, ads came to us and said, look, you know, we believe in what you're doing. They cashed out some money from their retirement funds. Wow. And we took our big vision and fit it to what we could afford.
To our budget. We took our vision and adjusted it to our budget.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a sobering experience, I would imagine.
It is, yeah. So, you know, so that's what we did, you know, like we use family members to help us, you know what I mean? Like we got, you know, Bailey's cousin works for a plumbing company and.
Do you guys need a sec?
Yeah, no, it's all right. I think the iPad's not charging for some reason. So we're going to have to switch back over.
Fucking Bailey's iPad, dude. Come on. Right. You know,
it should be. It should.
Call Elon Musk. Get his ass down there. He can power with the Cybertruck.
Bro, what's up? So, you're right. We fit it.
Sometimes I love this show. I really do. That shit makes me laugh, man. I'm not going to kill the stream. I'm going to talk to everybody on Facebook until, because they're going to come back. So it's not like a big deal. But Michael says, Mead Maker from Wyoming. Welcome, Michael. Is it better to outsource media or tackle myself? What do you mean, Michael? You mean media like... Yeah, clarify that, Michael. I would love to answer your question. I think I know what you mean. I think you're talking like social. But let me know. See, here they are again. Outsource media. Yeah.
I'm so Michael, sorry, dude.
Dude, it's... I was cracking up. It's totally okay. It happens. I mean, this is just what it is, man. You know, if you were,
yeah,
I mean,
this it's is like, life. This is life post COVID, right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you were in the studio, it's like just getting up and walking out mid sentence. That would be weird. But this, this is fine. It's all right. It happens.
This is funny. Bye. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
To be continued. So yeah. So I mean, we did what we could. You know, we. A lot of what we were able to do, we were able to do because there are a lot of awesome people that believed in what we were trying to do believed in us. And so that was, you know, like we built a place with our bare hands and with the help from our families and, you know, all kind of stuff like that. And, you know, we opened it. We had, I think, was it like -$34 in our bank account. And we opened, we wanted to do another round of brews to have a couple more beers on tap. Mm-hmm. And there was no, we literally had no money. We had rent had kicked in. We had to start paying. And so we were like, well, I guess now's when we're opening.
You know? I guess we're open.
Yeah, right. Like, so we had a bunch of delays we had to overcome. And then once we did, we started brewing. And we opened with, I think, 4 or 5 beers on tap. And just kind of went from there and tried to keep it going. So, you know, now 2.5 years on, we celebrated our first anniversary. And then, like 3 weeks later, the entire state locked down for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we almost lost the place, in the first few months.
Wow. You're spilling a lot. You're going over a lot right now. Let's back up a little bit because there's a lot in there to cover and we could do probably a couple of hours on basically what you just went through if we were more of a detailed podcast. But I find it interesting that your family trusted two dudes who had negative dollars.
Yeah, well, we
with
we
money. Had money,
but we spent it on opening the brewery, and then by the time we actually opened it, we were forced to open when we did because we needed to
spend all of our money at more beer. Go to morebeer.com.
Those guys will siphon your dollars if you don't watch out because it turns out making good beer takes a lot of stuff.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you can do it in 2 buckets and a bathtub. You can. Yeah, but you should you? I don't know.
Yeah.
The other thing is interesting is you were looking at a brew on premise. And I think I think that's really funny because like they're not around. And, you know, you're always going to find more people to drink beer than to make beer. So I feel like you did the right thing. Did the right thing. Because, I mean, homebrew shops, you know, working the wholesale side of homebrew shops, it is tough. The margins are just tight. I mean, some stuff is like 10%. And you're like, that's my margin. I can't go any... And then other shops go, well, I can't sell this. I have to sell it for more than everybody else does. Like, I don't know what this, like, this is just what it is. Yeah. It's hard. That's challenging.
And it's a numbers game too. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, it's okay. What's your population? Well, there's, you know, 600,000 people in the, you know, greater Bakersfield area. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that's barely enough to support a home. We finally have a homebrew shop. It's been here for, you know, a year and a half, but that's barely enough to support a homebrew shop.
Yeah.
You know, and the places that are the really cool homebrew shops, like the, you know, the wine and cheese shop down in was it Simi Valley or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know,
home, like that homebrew place wine is super and cheese cool. making shop.
Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And there's a reason why they have the reputation they do, but that's also, they've got access to basically to LA. Like, you know, they have 6 million people that are living pretty close. And so that's enough for them to have a couple homebrew shops down there. And it's almost one of those sort of like inverse kind of things where we're in a situation where 25, you know, 20, 25, 30 years ago, you know, you probably could make a better living doing a homebrew shop because, you know, you couldn't get craft beer unless you were making it. You know what I mean? There were 1 or 2 brands. Well, now you go to every, you know, like, you know, corner market, bottle shop, whatever it is, and they've got a massive craft beer section that has fantastic beers.
for, you know, a reasonable price.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, and so now it's like, well, I could, unless you're really dedicated and you want it as a hobby, if you just want to drink good beer, go buy it. You know what I mean? Like,
that's what I do. You know, and like, honestly, you know, working at More Beer was very informative as far as like how to grow a business, because the reason those guys are still around and successful is because they had a vision for growth from the jump already. I mean, they started in a garage pouring malt extract into jars. You know what I mean? And I don't think you can get to that level without going, okay, this is where I want to be in 5 years. Let's make it there. Normally, I think when people open a homebrew shop, they're like, okay, this is my community shop and this is where I am. But the vision, you know, the vision needs to be there. And it's just, you know, I think a lot of it is on a similar scale, like any retail thing, even like craft beer, right? You need to work on your distribution network too. You need to make sure people know who you are. I think it's a little bit different because you have a tap room, you're a destination. Like I said, there's more beer drinkers than there are beer makers, but it is sort of like similar too. If you want to grow your business, at some point you're going to be looking at distribution a little bit heavily than you are now. Do you distribute right now?
Yeah, locally we do. Yeah. We have some bottle shops and then we're on a few bars and restaurants around.
Gas stations and,
yeah. Like Bailey just said, gas stations.
Well, we have a gas station.
There's
a company that owns a bunch of gas stations around here that's their thing. Like not everything, but a lot of their stuff is like local. They take stuff from like local restaurants that they package and then they'll sell it in their snack sections, and then they really prioritize like local beers and everything like that. And so they have a massive like craft beer cave. It's all filled with, you know, Southern California craft beer and everything. So they're gas station, but they're not like a traditional, just like, it's not like, you know, Fast Trip or something like
that. No, they're craft stations, guys.
Yeah. I mean, that's, they've got like a wine section that they've got. You could go get a, you know, $90 bottle of Cabernet.
I like that.
You wanted to, you know, there. So
God bless, man. Can you imagine? I'll take 20 on pump number 4 and then this $90 bottle of Cab Sauv from fucking Bedrock or whatever. I don't know, man.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it, man. That's cool. Well, look, let's take a quick break.
Okay.
I'll open one of the beers and we'll get to talking about the beers and a little bit more about the business and your guys' approach to brewing these beers and, you know, what goes into everything over there at Crusader, right? All right, everybody, hang on real quick. It's the session and we will be right back.
You're tuned into the session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
And thanks for sticking around, everybody. We are still here with the boys from Crusader Brewing in lovely, cool, and balmy Bakersfield, California. And I'm about to open the Golden Cross Kolsch Style Ale. And I will say that the bottle caps, as soon as I open up this box today, I saw the American flag bottle caps, and I'm like, homebrew caps. I love it. Like, I mean, I'm instantly recognizable. Here's the label. I love the label. Tell me a little bit about the brewery name. Why did you pick Crusader?
So I have, my education is in medieval archaeology. That was kind of one of the things that I was interested in. Plus with, Bailey was a Operation Iraqi Freedom combat vet. So he was deployed to Iraq. You know, we've got like some of the, like the Anglican Catholic kind of, you know, thing going on and stuff. And so it all fed together into this idea. Plus, you know, when you're sitting there brewing and talking about like, you know, what are the things that, you know, you would like to see in beer? Like, what would you want to do with it? Like, it's very much a lot of what the breweries that are opening, people getting into craft beer and in the industry, it's very much like, what's your crusade? Like, what is the thing that you're wanting? What is the message you're wanting to bring with your beer? You know what I mean? Whether it's, you know, social or, you know, or just as far as the, the craft of the beer is concerned. Like, what message do you want to send with your beer? What is your what's your product going to speak? Yeah. So we kind of were talking about that, and it was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, it's like a beer crusade. Like, we don't like bad beer. You know, we want to like get our message out there. And so it was kind of all wrapped up together, you know, like we're on a crusade against crappy beer, you know, like that's our thing. So, it kind of all came together. And then I was talking with my tattoo artist, and she put together this, this like coat of arms kind of a thing. And she's like traditional Celtic tattooing and, you know, does coats of arms and those kinds of tattoos. Just, she threw it all together, and we were like, that's awesome. I love that. The shield and the wheat and the whole nine yards. So it kind of grew from there.
Yeah, it is. It does have a sense of, I'll say a sense of place. It's not what I mean, but like, purpose, you know what I mean? And that's hard to get with logos that have a lot going on. I mean, your logo has a lot going on. Not that it's busy, but there's a lot of information there, but it is tied together very, very well.
There's also aspects of our family crest, individual family crest. Chris is the rearing stag that's on his family crest. Mine would be the arrows. So there's multiple representations of our family and heritage on there as well.
Nice. I figured that was a Harry Potter Patronus reference, but you know, I don't know.
Well, we take inspiration a lot from the beer companies that we, you know, that we enjoy, and those traditions that we enjoy, you know, the Wine Stefaners, Fullers, you know, the stuff like that, where, you know, they have that kind of like rich history, and it's even like Budweiser, you know what I mean? You look at their logo and you look at their cans, and they've got all the stuff that's all part of their, you know, 200 year history or 120 year history or whatever it is, you know, from their product all put on there. And we kind of were like, that's cool. We want to kind of riff on that and have that like a little bit of gravitas and like, you know, kind of tradition that's sort of representative of what we're doing.
If we're going to be going into bottles, you kind of have to have something, right?
Yeah.
You got to do it. We're talking about the, what is the term? Iconography?
Yeah. Iconography.
See? Iconography. There you go. I think it is. It does very much invoke that, you know, that sort of middle age, you know, vibe, but also it's modern and it keeps it current. So I think that's pretty cool. So how did you get a degree in medieval archaeology and then become a cop?
I feel like medieval architecture. That's the
medieval architecture would be tight.
Joke, but I could have gotten a degree in medieval architecture. But there were a couple things that I kind of always wanted to do. I come from a family of cops, and it's always something I thought would be, you know, like would be fun to do, and that I get this sort of sense of purpose and, you know, all kind of stuff like that. I was in a program in Scotland, finished my master's, and basically the whole world fell apart because it was 2008, 2009. So the market collapse just destroyed funding for everything. Programs got cut. And it was like, well, I could go $150,000 in debt getting my PhD and, you know, go teach for $50,000 a year somewhere and never be able to own a house.
So you decided to open a brewery.
I came back in the States. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Look, Bailey, he likes to suffer. Chris needs to suffer.
I do, which is also very medieval, too. So, you know, right. We see Monty Python, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Self-flagellate, dude.
Yeah, right.
On the altar of death.
It was one of those things that came back and just at the time, I kind of worked, you know, for a nonprofit. And then just about the time the economy started
super
picking
lucrative
up,
nonprofit.
Yeah, love it. You got to love nonprofits, baby.
Had the chance to apply, got accepted in the academy and went through. So
nice.
You know, started doing that. So that was a thing, and it was awesome.
It was cool. What a culture shock, though, man.
Yeah.
From Scotland, I imagine you're digging around in the dirt. You know what I mean?
I spent a lot of time in libraries at the master's level. There was a lot of, I mean, I did do some stuff. There was a lot of, I spent a lot of time in special collections with really, really old books and like white gloves and like ladies hovering over you to make sure that you didn't breathe too heavily on the pages.
Oh, see, you didn't tell me there were ladies involved in this. So now I understand.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That is by far one of the more interesting sort of pre-brewery ownership jobs that I've heard of. I mean, that's pretty wild to me. That's very.
But there's a lot of what we took from, you know, like Bailey talked about it being in the military, and then me with law enforcement and everything. Like, you know, you get off on Friday night, which usually was like, you know, 12:30, you know, in the morning, on a, you know, Saturday morning or something like that. 14 hour shift, and you know, working with everything, and you're like, all right, well, let's get the squad together. We'll go over to, you know, the pub and sit down, and you only have an hour and a half to, you know, or an hour to have drinks before they do last call. And so everybody, we usually get a couple pitchers of beer, like some kind of craft beer, and sit down and, you know, decompress and, you know, drink and, you know, talk about the week and, you know, all that kind of stuff like that. And then kind of shake it off and then be able to go home to our families and not have what had happened travel with us back home. And that was a big thing that they taught us to do is
be an alcoholic.
It's just to be able to like figure out a way to leave that, like sitting around drinking beer. That was especially in Scotland, like they'll throw you out of the country if you don't drink beer. So there was a lot of that happened when I was there. And that thing, same thing too, just the idea of being able to sit down and have a session, you know what I mean? And spend a couple hours drinking beer and talking about whatever, solving the world's problems or, you know, whatever it was, talking about school or work or, you know, families or relationships or whatever. And so we kind of wanted to bring some of that idea to, you know, to Bakersfield, at least, and then hopefully out from there, you know?
Yeah.
So kind of fed into the whole thing.
The whole thing, you know, and that is sort of an aspect that you don't hear a lot about it in both of your, you know, careers, being in the military and the police. It's like to decompress so you don't bring it home. But then also I think so it doesn't carry over to the next day. I feel like being in the military or being, you know, maybe that's more apt for a police officer is you don't want to let that build up and compound. And then you're taking out yesterday on today.
Yeah.
That's a lot of psychological nonsense that you got to go through. I mean, in both cases, that's very hard. That would be very hard, dude. I can barely do it. And I fucking podcast. So I can't imagine where it's like, you know, you're roasting in, you know, basically a suit of armor, modern day armor, or, you know, you're chasing after people or doing whatever, putting your lives in danger. And then you have to, you know, basically forget about it. Yeah. That's challenging.
So I was a flight engineer on a fixed wing aircraft for the Army. And
whatever.
It was easy, man. It was easy.
Yeah. Come on. You didn't tell me you had a cush job, dude. I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah,
I got blown up. Yeah.
So, I'm just picturing Hurt Locker. That's all.
But you know, we would travel all over the United States or whatever, and when you get there, you go to the local place and you drink the local beer or whatever. You eat the local food, and so that's where a passion for local really kind of set in for me, was trying these different things and trying the different. Meals and the heritages that we have just across the United States, even, you know, because it changes from the West Coast to the East Coast. You've got five or six different flavors across this country.
Oh, for sure. There's no way out here in the West Coast you can get scrapple.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't happen. So,
spam eggs and rice isn't.
Yeah.
Like maybe like a Hawaiian barbecue joint. They have those, right. But you know,
yeah, exactly.
Cuisine is wild, man. And how it permeates through cultures is, there's been TV shows by people more endearing than I am that talk about that specifically. But let's talk about your Kolsch here real fast. Tell me a little bit about the Kolsch, the Golden Cross. I did leave you hanging. It sounded like I was going to say more and I didn't.
Yeah. Golden Cross.
Yeah. The Golden Cross.
So obviously we have that Golden Cross in our logo I adapted for the brewery.
Oh, it's a homebrew recipe. Oh, cool.
Nice. It was a straight up, like, originally it was, I was trying to do like as traditional a Kolsch as I possibly could. You know what I mean? It was like, I think it was a pearl hops or spalter or something like that. And, you know, Pilsner and, you know, whatever. And then when we started brewing together, I kind of was like working more into like looking into like newer like hops and stuff like that, but still kind of trying to keep that tradition, that German tradition, that Kolsch tradition. So I wanted something that was, and also you have to know Bakersfield, Kern County is very much like a Coors and Budweiser, you know, area. Like it's one of the, like the last few unconquered, you know, premium brand, regions in California, that hasn't been, you know, dominated by craft beer. So trying to do something that was craft flavorful, but also light enough. And the Kolsch was the perfect vessel for that. But I also wanted to make it interesting enough for people that, you know, are craft beer people to get something out of it as well. So I switched up some of the, we use Mandarin of Bavaria in this instead of, you know, like a more traditional German hop. You get some of the global hop quality, but then it's also got some of that, like tangerine, mandarin, orange, citrus kind of a flavor to it, that I think plays really well with that like fruity Kolsch yeast. And then with the lower fermentation temperature, you do get that clean kind of crisp drinking experience. And this is the beer that, you know, when we have barbecue competitions that are, you know, we've got a lot of guys that are, you know, oil field workers and roughnecks and construction guys and stuff like that come out for those. They're like, you know, I don't like craft beer. It's like, well, what do you drink? Well, here, try this. And they're like, oh my, like, and then they'll bring friends back. They'll come back on their own and be like, you have to try this beer. And now we have, you know, people that are coming to us regularly to try this. And they're like, okay, well, if I like this, what else do I not know about craft beer? And then it branches them off into trying other stuff that's maybe at their wheelhouse. And then they discover something that they, you know, that they're into.
Yeah. Some of the things that you hear working in the front of house, with people's misconceptions about beer is, you know, like, well, I don't want that light, super hoppy stuff, or, oh, I don't drink that really dark stuff because it tastes like this. And it's like, well, the color has nothing to do with how the end product is going to taste. Mm-hmm. So, you know, automatically just let's remove that misconception from your mind that, you know, it's going to be bitter or it's going to taste like this or that. Like, it's fun to educate people as you go in this field for sure. So,
and also make something that's that you don't have to think about. Like, you could parse this down and you could break it down and you can say that it's got this and these flavors and this whatever, but ultimately what it comes down to is, do you like it? You know what I mean? Like, when you experience this beer, is this an experience you like to have? Is it good? Do you want to repeat it? Do you want to have another beer? You know, and at 5%, you know, that's kind of like our that's where we want to be, because that's, again, we want to bring that session culture, that which, again, Kern County Bakersfield is, that people don't know what a session is in, you know, the US usually, mm-hmm. but we do. We know what it is because we've all got a case, you know, gotten a case of Budweiser and sat out with friends and drunk through a 30 pack with, you know, two or three other people and spent a couple hours drinking. You know what I mean? Like, we know what that is, even if we don't like craft beer or understand what a session is. So we're trying to harness that and bring that kind of inclination into our tap room, into our brewery.
Yeah, that's that separation between craft and commercial. It has sort of been, I don't know, stigmatized or I don't know the right term, but it's like, you know, saying you don't like craft beer is basically saying you don't like flavors. I don't like flavors, but, you know, looking at even just on your website, you have a map, like a Google map of where you are, and there's 1,000 restaurants near you, right? And it's like these people go to these places. Everyone in Bakersfield, I would imagine, has a favorite Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
I would guess, right? You don't have a favorite restaurant, any ethnicity of food, right, without liking flavors. So if you don't like flavors in your beer, how do you like flavors in your food? Or how do you like a movie or a TV show? Or, you know, different flavors of the mind, if you will. Let's get really esoteric. But, and so I think that it's a good approach that you have is making something that can bridge that. And that's what I think a lot of craft beer makers are trying to do, find that beer that brings you in. It's like, you can't tell me you don't like craft beer because it means you don't like to taste things. And I don't believe that.
Well, and also, like, we're trying to destigmatize craft beer for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, to have people understand, like, all right, well, you know, we get people all the time that are like, oh, do you have any hazies? It's like, no, we don't. That's not really what we do. We do more sort of more traditional beers and stuff like that. We have IPAs, but again, we've taken our sort of like, you know, spin on that, which you'll get with the Barbarian. Mm-hmm. But it's like, well, you only drink hazies, like, and it, there, it's like, okay, are you a craft? Are you a beer drinker? Are you a beer fan? Or you do like hazies? That's great. That's totally like. You, that's
awesome. There's nothing wrong with
it. Nothing wrong with it. Right. But if all you drink are hazies, are you a craft beer drinker or are you a hazy beer drinker? You know what I mean? If all you drink is Budweiser, are you a beer drinker or are you a Budweiser drinker? You know what I mean? And to me, it's kind of the same. It's two sides of the same coin. One's premium and one's craft, but it's the same thing. Like all I drink are pastry stouts. You know what I mean? Like I only like sours. Okay, well, there's other flavor, like you're saying, there's other flavors out there. There's other things out there. That is one aspect of beer. Premium, you know, Budweiser is one aspect of beer. You know, hazies are one aspect of beer, but we have a whole range of these beers that, you know, depending on your mood. And that's how I drink based on the season and based on my mood. And I want everybody else to be able to do that as well when they come into the brewery.
I went scuba diving on Thursday and stopped by a brewery on my way home. I'm like, oh, this is a well-known brewery. I've had these guys' beer before. Go into the tap room, and literally out of the 15 beers, 14 of them were hazies. Mm-hmm. Hazy double IPA, hazy pale ale, or a hazy IPA.
And then they had,
and then the only one beer that they had that wasn't a hazy was a horchata beer. And I'm like, okay.
I mean, horchata is hazy. It's all the horchata I've ever had is cloudy as shit. So
that one beer that they had was horchata beer.
That makes me angry for you. And that's what I don't understand.
There's not even a problem with having a brewery that's what you do, but it's just like
there's so much other styles and flavors out there. I feel like as an industry, we kind of are starting to pigeonhole ourselves into one thing, and we're excluding the large audience that we could be having.
And that sometimes there's not a lot of subtlety too. You know what I mean? Like it's just like in your face all the time, which can be really, really fun. But also sometimes you just want something that is enjoyable, that you don't have to parse out, you don't have to think about, and you can just drink it and enjoy it.
Well, I think that's what. In my mind, and maybe this is just me bending reality to fit, you know, whatever I want, but I feel like that's what happened with Stone and their, you know, yellow fizzy beers for wussies kind of a shtick. It eventually bit them on the ass because when craft brewers started brewing lagers again, you know, that was fine in like the late 90s, early 2000s, where, you know, it's like everyone's trying to brew these big malty beers and these big hop bombs and they're chasing IBUs or whatever. But when that pendulum swung back the other way, and people are doing lagers and Kolsch's and bringing that back, yellow fizzy beer, I feel like that sort of, there was a backlash against that kind of marketing, that kind of aggressive marketing campaign.
Yeah.
And that's what turned me off to their whole brand. It's not something I should be saying, but I don't know what to do about it now. I'm stuck. I have to go forward because I can't go backwards.
Why words coming out of my
mouth? It's like, I don't understand. But like, but for me, that's what will turn me off to a brand instantly, is like if you're hyper aggressive about what you're doing. But back then that was very different for craft beer because we were trying to be a kumbaya sort of thing. Now we're back to being kumbaya, but also, you know, we have hazies or we do this or we have our own spin on it, but you can go elsewhere. And there was a time when it was like, we're your best craft brewery in the world. Yay. But I think now it's a lot of let's partner up, let's be friends, we're all cool, it's a community, and I like this phase of craft better. But I hear what you're saying, Bailey, where it's like there are different flavors you can discover, and if you want to be a hazy house, that's fine, but I just want to know up front. That's been my whole thing where it's like I don't care hazy so much. I mean, I really do, but most of it's kind of a shtick. But like if I go into a bar and 18 of 24 taps are hazies, I'm fucking leaving. I don't give a shit. Like, I'm not going to do it because hazy IPA, I don't really care, honestly, because I don't drink it. I don't drink IPA, so I don't give a shit. But hazy pale ale, now you're pissing me off. Unfiltered pills.
Is it hazy Kolsch's or hazy Pilsner?
Yeah, unfiltered. Like, I love Urban Roots. I was drinking their 10 degree Pilsner at the beginning of the show. Fantastic beer. Peter Hoey's a nice, handsome, well, relatively handsome guy. But that fucking unfiltered Pilsner pisses me off. But I understand he's doing like a rustic thing, and I get it, and I'm not going to, you know, begrudge him too much of that. But it's like at my core, I'm like, I don't know. I don't like it. It's like a slug over salt. I can't.
But also part of it too, like that's the thing that when we made that transition to from home brewing to like commercial brewing.
Yeah.
That it makes sense in your head, but does that translate to your customer? Because ultimately, again, you have to sell a product to keep your doors open. And when you say, hey, when you say unfiltered Pilsner, people have an idea of what you're talking about. If you said Keller beer, you have to educate that person on what a Keller beer is, or mm-hmm. a Zwickel beer, mm-hmm. or whatever, which is that's what an unfiltered Pilsner is, basically. You know what I mean? Like, well, what is that? I don't know what a Zwickel beer is. That's a weird word. I'm not going to order it. And then it sits on tap and you're like, this might be the best beer you've ever made, right. But nobody's going to order it because they don't know what that is. And it's a big, like, I don't know if I'm like autistic or something like that. That's a big thing that Bailey is like, no, we can't call it this because nobody's going to order it.
Well,
and like, nobody's going to be able to say it, and they're going to be embarrassed, and they're not going to order that beer.
And it's weird. And I think you're right. And I think it depends. I think it depends on your community and who you're targeting. Right. If you're opening a brewery in Portland, people are probably going to know that.
Yeah.
But maybe in a town like Bakersfield, they're probably not going to know that. Do you think that education in craft beer has sort of tapered off a little bit?
I think so. I mean, wouldn't you?
I think that education comes definitely. It's our responsibility as the brewery and as the brewers, and I think that part of that comes with saying, yes, it's a Keller alt beer. What that means is this. And then you explain it to them. So then they understand. So the next time I use the word Keller up on this menu, that's exactly what that means. I feel like that falls definitely on the brewery. And
yeah,
because people want to know. People, like we talked about earlier, people want to talk to the brewer and the owners and all of us for whatever reason. I've yet to figure out. They want to talk to us. And part of that is, they want to know more. They want to know more on why we call it that, or what the heritage is, or where that beer comes from. Why does it taste like this? And all those questions. I think education is still alive and well in the brewing industry, as long as we take the time to actually be out there and help people understand it.
My big fear, and it's also part of the whole, like, falls into like that idea of like that crusade or whatever, to bring, especially in here in Bakersfield, where we have five craft breweries here in Bakersfield, and again, we have over 500,000 people who live just in sort of Bakersfield, the greater Bakersfield area. So we don't have a very huge saturation of the market, with local craft beer, but I feel like one of the things that I don't want to see that I get sometimes when I go into breweries in some places is the craft beer people or the brewery or whatever it is that has moved. They've moved past that education. They've moved past that idea that, hey, there's still, you know, craft beer is what, 25% of the beer market in the United States. So there's still 75% of the market that is, you know, premium or something other than craft. There's still people out there that you know, need to be introduced to craft beer. And in a lot of places, especially there's a saturation of craft beer and stuff like that. Like, I get that a lot with people coming in the brewery. It's like, hey, this is really chill. This is super cool. Like, you guys are really nice. Like, I went into X, Y, or Z place with my buddies drug me in, and I felt like really uncomfortable and really out of place. And like, you know, they're pretentious and like this and whatever. And it's like, it's not, this isn't Napa. Beer shouldn't be Napa Valley. Like, you shouldn't have people look down on you because you can't tell them why you like the product that you're making. It's like, I just like beer. Like, I want to drink this beer and I like it and it's great, and, or whatever it is. And I want to try more beers because I like this beer or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, we shouldn't be making people feel like, oh, well, you know, you don't drink craft beer. Guess what? The train's already, you know, departed, and you missed the ride. And so now you're left behind and you just got to drink, you know, Budweiser for the rest of your life.
Right. You can't be on it. I mean, to be honest, that was always my hesitancy to get on board with the beer is like craft beer is like wine thing. That was like early 2000s. We were really trying to push that in the craft beer industry. And it's like, it's not wine at all. It should never be like wine. It is blue collar to the core. And that's the popularity of lager beer in America. You got blue collar numbskulls pounding Budweisers, and that's fine. But that's who we need to change. We don't need to go after the, oh, well, you know, $25, $50 bottle of sour beer. We don't need to chase that. We don't need to try to be like Napa Valley, like you're saying, Chris. We don't need to chase the releases. I mean, we are chasing the releases now, unfortunately. But we don't need to do that to grow craft beer. It doesn't need to happen.
Who's not really?
Yeah, I know. But it's like, especially back then, and, you know, now I guess you have to because it's more hyper-regional. You know, you need to stand out in your region. And so you can do those kinds of things. But it was like, oh, we should be like wine. We should be respected like wine. No, we don't want to be respected like wine. I don't think.
Our neighbor, just behind us, is one of the largest metal fabrication shops in the oil industry, and they're producing massive structures for these oil rigs and stuff like that. And it's just a bunch of welders, you know. And we get a ton of people from there, and they bring a ton of people in. And what do they drink? They drink lagers. They drink our lagers because Bakersfield. People say Bakersfield's a Bud Light town. Well, it's a lager town. Like, that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, and really, like, to be fair, it's hot as crap 9 months out of the year, you know? And so it's hard to drink anything that's heavy. You know what I mean? Like, it really is. You know, like, I get excited for, you know, stout weather, which we have like 3 months of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like beanie weather here in Bakersfield. Like, you, if you blink, you miss it. And then now you're just a douche because you're wearing a beanie and it's too hot for wearing a beanie. So, you know, like, it's kind of the same way. So we have, you know, you have to brew for the palate of the people around you and also still be able to find a way to express your put out your message. You know what I mean? Like, who you are, what's your take on this? You know, why is it different from, you know, everywhere else or whatever it is? And so, you know, that's part of the challenge. It's also fun. And, you know, everywhere I've been, you know, when you talk about like Germany, the UK, you know, especially Scotland and stuff like that, like it's people sitting and drinking beer. You know what I mean? Like, and that's it. And it is, beer is food. It is blue collar, you know, but it also can be, I don't know. It's hard to explain. Like wine's a beverage, like beer is food. You know what I mean? There's something that's like soul enriching and nourishing about beer. You know what I mean? Which is historically argued like that is the origin of beer. You know what I mean? It's not a libation. It didn't start out as that. It was a way to deliver nutrition. You know what I mean? To whatever, and then the alcohol is a happy accident that came along with it, you know, whatever. Like, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it's food, man. It's sitting around. It's the same thing as like getting together with your friends, going to dinner, you know, whatever, everybody's, you know, eating, and then you're drinking, and it's this whole, you know, social experience, which I'm not saying wine isn't, or, you know, that, like you said, the nicer, the expensive sour beers. I think the whole bottle share thing is super cool with that. That's popped up where, you know, everybody gets together, you get five or six guys, everybody brings a couple bottles, they share it out and they spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours drinking or whatever it is. That's cool. Like, I want to encourage that because that's what I like. I like being able to sit down and have like a social experience with, you know, whoever it is that I'm drinking with. So, you know,
I don't think that we need to define craft beer in that manner, because to me, that's what the wine culture for the most part. You know, you split a bottle of wine, you do this thing or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, anyway, I'm talking about marketing from 20 years ago. So it's not like it's super relevant now. Everything's changed. But let me talk about your culture real fast. I like it. I think it tastes more like English style. If there's an English style Kolsch. Because there is the biscuity malt is sort of, it's almost like ESB reminiscent, and I don't mean in a crystal malt way. I mean like in a malt mouthfeel biscuity way that I like, that I think is unique to a Kolsch. You know, it's not that sort of like I say clean, and I don't mean clean as in like, you know, contamination. I mean that Kolsch flavor, but you're targeting, you know, Budweiser, Bud Light drinkers. You're giving them, I think, exactly what they want. You're giving them a little bit of flavor. You're getting maybe even more flavor than they're expecting. Because a Kolsch can be, you know, it can sort of be, I don't say flavorless, but it can sort of be not as super intense as you might want it to be. That ester profile can be a little off-putting, I think. But and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're sort of loading it with a little bit more of this sort of like biscuity, maybe almost a Munich thing. I'm pretty bad at picking that out and determining which is which. Instead of relying on a lot of the yeast-driven flavors, and it is more of a robust tasting Kolsch. What's the grain in this that I'm tasting?
Yeah, it's we use some biscuit malt. There's a little bit of like a hint of biscuit malt in there.
Hell yeah.
And that is one of the reasons why I did that. You know what I mean? It's a very, very, very light Pilsner malt. There is not a lot going on. It's funny because that was, so my brother is my assistant brewer slash brewer.
Brother.
So but he went, he's a master brewer. He went to VLB and got his master brewer cert there. Wow. And brought some of our Kolsch with him. And they were like, this is really awesome. It's really at the outer range of Kolsch. Like there are a few brands of Kolsch that do have that kind of like reinforced kind of biscuit flavor.
Yes.
But it tastes too good. It's because these are all, you know, like Berliners and stuff like that. And all they did was crap on Kolsch's the entire time, apparently. But they're like, yeah, no, it's got too much flavor. It tastes too good to be a Kolsch. So, you know. So then I'm like, oh damn it! Now I gotta change the recipe so that it has less flavor to be on, you know, traditional or you know whatever it is. I'm like, you know, it is what it is. It's our
that's my side where I'm like, no. People in Bakersfield need that flavor. We can't just be drinking water. Like,
yeah, and I think the Mandarina Bavaria hops were a good choice in this too, because it does sort of lighten it up. There's those melon characteristics that pair well with the other flavors you got going on, the biscuit malt, and it ends on like a bright sweetness.
Well, and that's what, and it's kind of one of those things where you like, you look at the style guides and it's like, oh, it's supposed to have this fruity, you know, kind of a thing from the yeast and the esters. And, you know, and I think sometimes we get really focused on like these certain things are there and that we allow that to just define the style and take it over. Like
Hefeweizens,
you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Bavarian Hefeweizens. And it's just like Bananarama, you know what I mean? Like that's all you can taste is banana or bubblegum or whatever it is. And it's like, if you drink an actual real German, like Bavarian Hefeweizen, it does have banana notes to it, but they're much more restrained. They're not as in your face as a lot of like what we've come to expect as a Hefeweizen. So, you know, being able to have some subtlety with that yeast, you know, ester profile, but then try to bring that where people who do know Kolsch's are expecting some of that fruity kind of a characteristic to be there. That's why I kind of wanted to bring that Mandarin of Bavaria in there, because I feel like that's giving it some of that layer that people might be expecting from the yeast that is traditionally, at least, I feel like it's not as present in true Kolsch's as it winds up sometimes in North American, you know, or American Kolsch's, because again, it's, you know, the higher fermentation temper, the, you know, the more expressive yeasts and stuff like that, the, you know, bigger strains that have more of that kind of like Kolsch flavor. So being able to bring something else in, and also then being able to get some of that ester profile, but also get it out of the way of the Mandarin of Bavaria and some of the malt and sort of allow everything to kind of, you know, do its thing together.
Yeah.
The objective.
Yeah, for sure. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. I'll bring the other two beers and we'll cruise through those and wrap this up. What do you guys think? Sweet. Cool. Hang on, everybody. It's the session. We'll be right back.
Segmented, demented, fermented.
Fermented. It's the session.
Okay, thanks for hanging on, everybody. We are back, wrapping it up with Crusader Brewing Company. And by wrapping it up, I mean drinking two more beers. So, you know, there's that. There's not a whole lot of wrapping up to do, I guess. Not right now. The next beer I'm going to crack is the Blood Red Rye. I feel like that's probably a little more appropriate than the, I think, the double IPA you sent. So we're going to do this. It's an Irish red ale with rye and then maple syrup. What's maple syrup about? What's going on here? Why maple syrup in a perfectly responsible Irish red ale?
Well, the reason behind the beer was the Bacon and Craft Beer Festival.
Okay.
So we did that as home brewers. That was one of the first, that is the literally the first beer that we brewed and the first beer that we ended up bottling a year later. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I had a, you know, when you start brewing, you're like, okay, I'm going to brew the stuff that I like. When I love like Irish red ales, you know, like real traditional Irish red ales that are a lot sort of like lighter in like lighter bodied, crisper, easier to drink. And so I made an Irish red, you know, recipe.
Yeah.
And then when we were doing this, I was kind of playing around with like, you know, different adjuncts and different, you know, grains and stuff. And I kind of like the like rye. It's got like a nutty kind of spicy kind of a character to it. And I thought that was kind of cool. And so I added that to the Irish red and did a red with, you know, Irish red with rye, and thought it worked well. And then when we did this Bacon and Craft Beer Festival, we kind of were looking for something that could do, that would pair with like all the bacon that everybody was going to be doing. And, you know, kind of maple syrupy, you know, whatever. But of course, with fermenting, which we do, we have it's amber maple syrup. When you ferment it, you're not left with a lot because it's mostly sugar and water. And then the only thing that remains, unless you're adding like an essence or an extract or some kind of a, you know, like an artificial flavor or something like that, or you're pasteurizing your beer and then adding maple syrup to back sweeten it, you don't really get a lot of like maple syrup. You know what I mean? It's not like it's pancakes or something like that. You know, like it ferments out and you're kind of left with almost like a, it's like maple wood. You almost have like, it's almost like an oaky or like a woody kind of floral characteristic as opposed to, you know, whatever. And it worked because the rye obviously adds a lot of body and kind of like character to the beer, which is not in keeping with an Irish red, a true Irish red. So then if you add this, you know, sugar that ferments out pretty completely, it dries it out a lot more. So you kind of have this, I was trying to strike this balance between drinkability, but also like have a good impact of different flavors that are going on that are kind of interesting and fun and different. You know what I mean? So Irish red at this point, it's loosely an Irish red because that's what the original recipe started off as an Irish red. And it's become,
it's evolved.
It's kind of become its own thing now.
Yeah, definitely. Irish red. I mean, it's Yes, it has, for sure. Because it's too dry to be an Irish red, I feel like.
Well, and yes and no. Like,
also, it's brewed for the Bakersfield palate. So when it's 110 degrees outside and you're drinking something like an Irish red or a red in general, you don't want all that sweetness. You don't want all that thick body and all that kind of stuff. So
I guess that's my contention is, I mean, like a true Irish red is just a British pale or a bitter that they've added roasted malt to. You know what I mean? It's a lighter bodied kind of a deal. We have an idea of what an Irish red is here in the States that's much more malty and richer and bigger bodied, kind of like more firmly in the medium body range as opposed to kind of in the lighter body.
Right.
So I like I said, I still wanted to do something that kind of had that drinkability of a, you know, like an Irish red, like that was just basically a English bitter that had some more color and a little bit more character to it, but still was that kind of really drinkable, like easy drinking kind of a beer. So
what's the ABV on this? I love the label, but I will say the red writing is hard for me to read because I'm old.
It is. Yeah.
I'm old as shit.
5.5.
Oh, okay. Hell yeah. 5.5.
It's at the very bottom, right where your thumb was. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I saw like the line, but it just looked like a bar to me. You know, I will be honest. I saw the maple syrup and I'm like, I'm going to fucking hate this beer. And I don't hate it. And I think
somewhere between mediocre and okay.
Yeah.
And I don't hate it.
That's right. I'd rather drink my own blood than drink this beer. The maple syrup and the rye, I think, to what you're saying, Chris, I think work well together because it is sort of like the rye is maybe accentuating that like maple wood flavor. You know, like you're saying, after maple syrup gets fermented out, you're left with that sort of like woody thing. I think the rye spiciness sort of comes in and accentuates that more than anything. And it's very, very unique. And the fact that you didn't ply it with a lot of crystal malt and make it sort of sweet, like you were saying, Bailey, to tend to the Bakersfield palate, which is a cool turn of phrase. I think all of that works well together. I don't think it should. But I think it does. I think it's cool, like, and that's what
like
I like.
Piss and perfume.
Yeah, you know, like, but that's the kind of cool thing about beer, is that you can put shit together on paper. It shouldn't work. Well, it shouldn't work. I shouldn't like it. But then you do it, and it's like, oh, that's really cool. And then it can open your mind to other possibilities of stuff. It's the comparison has been made. It's like cooking. It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. And that's wild to me. I would never have, looking at this out on the board, I'd be like, I don't think I want to try that. Because I could just imagine Irish Red, maple syrup, heavy. And it is not a heavy beer at all. It finishes very, very, very dry and very clean.
So that's our third most popular beer that we sell.
That's wild to me.
So if first, second, and third is pretty fluid. Especially with the phrases, I want whatever the lightest beer you have is a very common phrase.
Sure.
And then I'll take an IPA, whatever your IPA is. Mm-hmm. That's why the IPA and the Kolsch are probably our two number one selling beers. So I disqualify those a little bit, a majority of the time. So that's our third, that's in our top three, first, second, third, just depending on what the day is. So
that's one of the things that makes me happy about it, that it is one of our best sellers, that people seek it out and tell their friends about it, because it was one of those beers that when we were like, the other brewers, people in town, the home brewers, the other craft breweries, like, you know, oh, what's your lineup going to be? Like, what are you doing? And we're like, we're going to do a Kolsch, we're going to do an IPA. We're going to do an Irish Red. And they're like, well, you're crazy. Like, you know, nobody drinks reds in this town. Like, it's too dark. It's too big. It's too whatever. And it's like, okay, well, you know, we're okay with taking it off tap if we need to, you know what I mean? If it doesn't sell well, but it's just been gangbusters since we started. So, I'm really happy that, it's popular. So
here's the thing about this beer is that, so I'm drinking it out of my Ears Up podcast, Mai Tai glass. Which there is a new one on sale right now on our Etsy store, etsy.com/shop/covers, or look for Summer Mai Tai on the Rocks glass on Etsy. Anyways, and I think that there was a little bit of hand soap in here, or like dishwashing soap. Because I smell it, I'm like, oh, that smells like fucking, like literally palm olive. So I drink it out of the bottle.
Secret ingredient.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I drink it out of the bottle, and there are more of these sort of like dark fruit aromas that I didn't get out of the glass. Because I think they're covered up. Then I poured it out of my Wayfinder, like, Stein kind of guy. And they're different flavors. And I know that, like, glassware, you know, different shaped glassware can deliver different flavors, which I don't like. That messes with my lizard brain too much. But there are a lot more flavors in here that I was not getting from my Rocks glass, from my Mai Tai glass. There was sort of like plummy, you know, raisiny kind of things that you should find in an Irish Red. So I like it. I like it a little bit more now because it's not so like dry.
That I hate about flights. A 4-ounce taster of a beer, I don't feel is a actual way to judge a beer. It kind of drives me a little crazy that people will come in and leave 8 untapped reviews from one sitting, and they're all from a 4-ounce taster, you know?
Do you guys live and die by untapped, or are you over untapped?
Oh, so completely over it. We were over it about a week into it. Like, beer sucks. I hate it. Then you go through and you look at all their stuff. It's one star.
Michelada. Modelo Michelada. Yeah. It's
right. Oh, you found my burner untapped account. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, and like you're saying, that's another thing too. Like, that's why we try to do, and so in the brewery, we do 500 milliliter pours, average pours. So you get basically 17 ounces of beer. And we do the Becker's or the Nonix.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, if we could get away with it and, you know, whatever, we had enough here that we were making. I love the Imperial Pint. I think it's an amazing, you know, unit of measurement.
Same.
Because it's enough beer, especially when it's only, you know, like in the UK, it's only like 3.5%, you know what I mean? So it's not going to get you completely wrecked, but it lets you experience that beer on a bunch of different levels. You know what I mean? It's like cask ales. Like when you punch that cask at the very, very beginning and it's super fresh and, you know, like unoxygenated or unoxidized, it has a certain flavor. If you come back the next day, it's got a little bit of a different flavor and it's actually good. And you come back the next day and, you know, and so it progresses when it sits in your glass. Yeah. Right. When it sits in your glass and it kind of like opens up and it warms up, especially with the red, you start getting more of those, you know, kind of more of those dark fruit flavors, like the, you know, and the maple syrup again delivers some of that because you're cooking sugar. And so you're getting that kind of reaction that gives you some more of those, you know, raisiny, plummy flavors.
It's like a light Irish red because again, it's not that heavy sweet that we would expect. It's well done. I like it. I bet that would go good with a slab of bacon too.
Yeah. It's a breakfast beer for sure.
Absolutely.
It's at a local steakhouse that we have here, Hungry Hunter. And I went there, had a steak with it, and I was blown away by it.
Yeah. Nice.
I don't eat a whole lot of meat. I don't eat a whole lot at home in general and in life. So,
You got too many kids.
I work too much at the brewery because I have too many kids.
Yeah, right. And it really is a good, like, I make barbecue sauces from it, but the sort of the original distribution location for Blood Red is a really, really great barbecue joint here, like on the other side of town. The guy came in and was like, yeah, I own this, you know, whatever. He drank through our beers and was like, this beer is amazing. And it's been on tap there ever since.
No, what do they call it? Give him a plug. Give him a shout out. Who is it?
It's Champs Barbecue. And they're fantastic.
That sounds like the most old school barbecue name in the entire universe. And I love it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
They're
good green, job, champ.
Yeah, right. Their green beans are like the best green beans. Like, wow. I would go there and just eat their green beans. That's how good they are. Super weird to say, but like, and their barbecue is fantastic. So that's saying something that, you know, whatever. They do a really great job. And it's
Chris is bougie as fuck. Oh, too, my so God. It's saying something. Like five wine memberships.
I don't have five. I'm down to two. But
you know, dude, that's the worst part is reducing your wine memberships, man. Absolutely.
I know. I feel bad. It's like you have to send the email out and then like they're like, hi though. You know, you can just, if you want to defer your shipment, like we can do that. And like it's like canceling.
It's not you, it's me.
It's canceling a gym member. Yeah, it is. It's like breaking up with somebody. You
yeah.
know?
Like we had one at Ridge for a long time and you know, I was like, I need to break out because my whole wine fridge is full of Zinfandels.
Yeah.
I love Ridge, and I don't know
how we were too. Yeah.
If you love Ridge, if you know about Ridge, but they're like very like they're 60s, you know, natural winemaking, and not natural winemaking, but like natural fermentation. Mm-hmm. So they don't sulfite; they're just natural yeast, whatever's on the grapes, and it's like that really classic sort of like 60s like vibe. But we had to cancel it because I'm like, I don't know. We just I would love a white every now and then. They're like, now it's the summer, now it's rosé, so you'd have to like limit it. But I will. Here's a plug for Kermit Lynch. They're like a wine importer in Berkeley and they have a wine club. It's like $50 and you get two like Italian wines, generally Italian or French wines. It's fucking worth it. It's good stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It's a variety, man. And that's what we're after here.
Yeah. I you know, that's again, like the whole thing with just being able to like sit and talk about like, you know, you have a steak, you have barbecue, you know, whatever. Like, it's just a good beer to sit and drink and eat and hang out. You know,
I wish that we could do more with beer memberships like we can with wine memberships. To me, that would be cool. But I think a lot of it is like wineries are sort of set up for that distribution level where they can do mail order stuff or whatever. But I don't know that breweries necessarily are that can sustain that. I don't know the legalities of it, but like, I would love to be able to hop between brewery memberships like that, like you can with wine.
I'd be all for it if I could charge $20 for a $7.50 of Blood Red, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a tough one. And that's, I guess that's probably where the margins are.
Well, yeah. And you know, I don't know. It's a lot less kitsch, and it's more like we were talking about, like, that's, like you said, like, that's not what beer is. You know what I mean? Like, and I, it's some aspects it can be, but I just, generally speaking, I don't think that's.
But that's beer again, to our, what we do is we set up a brewery to have people come in for the session, and you come in, you drink two or three beers, you're there with your crew, you're there with your friends or whatever. And we have a club and invite people to come in, and you know, they have their mug and they have their stuff there, because we want people to come in and drink with us at the brewery. So, which is a very, very bad business model in this COVID world that we live in. But at one time it was a brilliant idea.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's how you made your money. That was the model, tap room.
And also too, like, it's, I don't know, like, it's cool to sit and watch, like, that, because there are club members that have met because they see the other person with their club membership mug, and then they get to talking, and then, like, our club member night once a month where everybody gets a free beer and everybody comes and hangs out, like, they're organizing barbecues and, like, potlucks and stuff like that, where, you know, we have a guy that has a, like, a big train that's a bar, like a smoker. And so he'll, like, roll his train up to the, in the back of the brewery, and, like, smoke a bunch of tri-tips or briskets or, you know, whatever. And then everybody will bring a bunch of, you know, and so it's cool to, like, see that community develop around beer, you know what I mean? Around that sort of, like, shared love of beer.
He has a train.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in the shape of a train on a trailer.
With a pig driving it.
Like, yeah.
I love this guy.
Dale Bernhardt is the name of the pig. It's a whole very.
What was Dale Earnhardt's name? Was it like Iron Head or Iron Sides? Was it like Fatty Sides? Isn't come on?
It's very cool.
That's funny.
I absolutely love it for what it is. Not my style.
No,
but
no, you're not going to emulate it.
No. I don't need a train. Thank you. I used to work for the railroad. I'm good on trains.
What haven't you guys done? I feel like you guys have lived 12 lives already by now. I just,
you need that big foundation when you open a brewery.
So. I think so too, man. I feel like it helps you take the you know, roll with the punches.
Yeah. If you're used to disappointment, it makes it easier to open a brewery.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's why more married people open breweries. I'm just kidding. Barbarian is what I just opened a little bit ago. See, this label I can read. Actually, you know what? I really love this green, like, it's almost like a green metallic, which you can't really get through on cam. Well, yeah, sort of. It catches the light really nice.
That.
That's very,
very
cool.
Proud of his metallic labels.
I love it.
That was his call. That's all him. I'm going to give him complete credit for that.
I don't know if I sent you the red metallic labels or not. They might just be boring, the old label.
Hard to say. Boring. I'm going to say
the
boring.
The old ones look really faded out. That's the new label. I just saw. So
okay.
Yeah, we're phasing out a set of labels and going to those metallic ones that I absolutely love.
Yeah, they're great. So this is what is it? It's like dark over here, so it's hard for me to see you.
That's right. So we did sort of a lower bitterness West Coast IPA. So it is going to have more bitterness than like a. I guess like a hazy or, you know, whatever. So it is mm-hmm. in the IPA, the West Coast IPA bitterness wheelhouse. I think it's like 55 IBUs or 58 IBUs or something like that.
Yeah.
So on the lower end, so not super aggressively bitter, but we hopped it with Mosaic. And again, kind of what we're trying to do with sort of like new meets old and, you know, whatever, there was a newer hop called Barbe Rouge out of France. That's really, really, really good. And we got a sample of it, and I was like super.
It sucks. It's a bad hop.
And yeah, don't ever let anybody use it. You know,
see, this is the problem. You guys fucking come on these shows and you go, here's this hop that no one has, and it's called this, and this is how you get it. And this is where it's
yeah, right. I'm not going to tell you where to get it because we ran out of it from our previous supplier. They don't have any more, and I had to scramble to find another one.
So. Yeah, well, it's French, and no one likes the French. So
yeah, and you know what? That's probably what it is. Yeah. But it's good. It was super interesting. Like it was like red berry and like berry candy. And so I was kind of like really intrigued by that flavor profile and kind of knowing that some of the like biotransformative stuff that happens to Mosaic emphasizes that like blueberry kind of a flavor. And so rather than like the kind of the more citrusy profile.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of wanted to play around with that interaction between like blue and red berry, like red currant, like rat, like it all, to me, it almost hits like a raspberry Jolly Rancher. Like it's almost like fake red, like fruit, you know what I mean? Like red candy.
Yeah. And you know what, it's interesting because it's smooth and, God, I don't even know how to put this. I was telling Bev today. It's like I'm running out of vocabulary to make describing IPAs interesting. It's hard for me now because I'm the only one here. I'm the only one doing it. So like this is why I need other people to fucking join me this dumb show. But like it's smooth and let's just say round, or let's just say pillowy. Let's exaggerate a little bit. It's a little pillowy, a lot like you would find in a hazy beer. Okay, but. It's not a hazy beer. That's just, you know, either chill haze or just a brewery. It's a beer. It's not like a pillowy, you know, shit in suspension beer. And I think that's cool. So you're essentially giving maybe these hazy people what they want in that soft roundness, but it doesn't look like fucking gravy on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And that's kind of, that was like my little, like, I don't know, like brewers, like, shot across the bow kind of a thing where it's like you don't have to have chunks of hops in your beer to get that impact
sediment.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You don't have to have trub in your beer. You know what I mean? Like a lot of hops are already unstable. You know what I mean? Like why put a bunch of protein that's also unstable and leads to spoilage.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like and it's hard to drink. Like a lot of what we're trying to do is make these flavors and these beers accessible and easy to get to, but also interesting enough for people that are again wanting to parse the beer out to sort of its base part. I don't know. It was fun to brew, and it was a surprise because we had a beer.
We still brew it.
Yeah. It was a surprise.
It's not fun anymore. It was fun the first time. Now it's fucking pain in the ass.
Yeah, right?
Now you're brewing it all.
We opened with an IPA. This beer we brewed and it blew that IPA out of water. And so we ended up switching. So now this is our IPA. Like this is the always on tap, like headliner flagship IPA. And it's booted the other one, which we haven't brewed in 8 months or something like that. And it was, that was a launch. That IPA was a launch IPA. We launched that IPA.
It was before COVID. It was launched.
Yeah.
So over a year.
These hops are rad. I mean, I think these could be like really good in ESB.
I had an XPA from Firestone and it was a single hop, like experimental deal that they did. And, I called Bailey and I was like, I'm drinking an XPA from Firestone, guaranteed that was in there freaking, that was in the last, Luponic Distortion. And sure. And like, you look at the bottle and it's like red berries and you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And this is before they were labeling, they were telling you what hops were in the Luponic Distortions.
Yeah.
And I was like, guaranteed they bought a bunch of it and they had some extra. And so they did a single hop XPA. Wow. And I was like, it's really good. Just as a single hop, you know, freaking pale ale, it's super tasty. So
this is good. I like that. That's a very creative. So, all right. So on it, it says, Barre Rouge D, is it DOH or DDH?
DDH. Yeah.
What's DDH? Double dry hop. Double dry hop. Okay. Double dry hop IPA. Okay. I like it. What temperature are you dry hopping at?
This one we do two doses. So the first one is our fermentation temperature of that beer, which is 68 degrees. And then the second one we do, which is the Barre Rouge. So we do the first dose of Mosaic, and then we like towards the end of fermentation, again, we get a little like biotransformative kind of process going, let it finish out. And then we sort of semi-crash it down to 60, 62 degrees. And we actually purge a second tank and we add the Barbe Rouge in, and we'll rack the beer off of the lees of the mosaic into the onto the Barbe Rouge, and then we let it kind of rest there for 5 days, I believe is what it is, at like 62 degrees.
I want to marinate pork in. What did you say, Bailey?
For whenever it's convenient.
Yeah. Days. Well, look. Yeah, man, you can't keep to a straight schedule yet.
It's super. I use it as a spritz on barbecue for like ribs and stuff like that. There it's great. It's good for it. Add some apricot and some brown sugar, and you can do like a barbecue sauce or whatever, a little bit of like vinegar and, you know, ketchup. Yeah,
super bougie.
Well, you can tell who has 100 kids and who doesn't.
I have two kids. They like to eat food. But I do too. That's why I stopped having more, because I don't want them to eat all my food. So, you know, I'm not hungry all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is good. I like this beer. I don't say that often with IPAs, but you know what? It's a very easy drink, and it almost is sort of English style in the sense that it's not over the top. There's a lot of roundness to it. There's a lot of softness to it. And the hop flavor really comes through a lot. It's not, I wouldn't call it a bitter IPA.
Yeah.
But it's flavorful.
That is probably the one of the number one things said about that beer is, here's the deal. I don't like IPAs, but this beer is fantastic. And it's like, okay, like I can live with that. Like if you're a big IPA head, I had a guy come in the other day and he's like, I only drink Panic from Track 7. What IPA do you have? And I'm
throw
like, well, I have our IPA. Like I don't carry Track 7.
Good brewery.
Like, well, I guess I'll try it. So I give him a sample. He goes, I don't like it. It doesn't taste exactly like this other IPA. And I'm like, yeah, that's because it's our IPA, bro. Like, I don't know what to tell you, you know? Like,
you can't be all things to all people. You just can't. And like that person, I mean, hey, yeah, that would be very hard for me to handle too. Cause it's like, okay.
I don't know. It's like Joe Rogan says, like just don't fucking read the comments. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
never
don't
read the comments.
Don't ever read the comments. It's a bad idea. Don't go down that rabbit hole, you know?
No. You never do it, man. Ever, ever, ever. Yeah, I only drink... Track 7 makes good beer, but this person doesn't understand that it's not... Why would you make the same beer? Even if you could, why would you? Even if you wanted to, you can't.
Not going to. Yeah, we want to make our own beers. We want to be our own... company. I have nothing against Track 7 and or their beers.
No, good beers.
But I'm not making their beer.
And then they probably thank you for it.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I don't know. It's the whole Untappd thing. It's like, you know, would you like go into a restaurant and be like, you know what, I hate turkey sandwiches. Give me the turkey sandwich.
I got
one star for this restaurant. Turkey sandwich was terrible. Yeah. It's like, well, why'd you order a turkey sandwich, man? Like, you ate turkey sandwiches. Like, why'd you order my freaking, my chocolate porter and you hate freaking dark beers? That's, and then give me a crappy rating on the freaking Untappd. It's like, bro, like, just don't, okay? Don't help me. Like, stop helping. You know, like.
It is weird. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, which did more damage to the craft beer industry? Untappd or when Budweiser bought Elysian
Goose Island or something.
Bought Elysian and then released that ad about like pumpkin beers. You know what I mean? That got everyone riled up. Like who did more damage to the craft industry? And I would say it's Untappd because it turns a lot of people away.
I guess the hardest part for me is that there's zero
standard.
There's zero thread that moves along through, and it's like, well, are you basing it off of what you enjoy, or are you basing it off of a set of standards that you are set and you have, like, everybody agrees upon,
right?
And it's very bold.
Very
it's
subjective.
Bold. It's
very
yeah.
subjective.
Well, as you guys know, it's educational too. There's a lack. What they've done is a great business model, because the beer drinker now is sort of ex-gamers, is what I sort of think of. They're like post-millennials, or I guess that's not right yet, like aging Gen Xers, who who are like used to like achievement based video games and achievement based shit. So it's like, oh, I got to get this thing. I got to chase this achievement. So they do this, but they also cheese it. Where they go like, oh, I don't like porters, but I want the porter badge from Crusader. So I'm gonna do that. I fucking hate it. I'm gonna be honest, but I don't care about the rating. What they're doing is they don't want to help anybody find good beer, which is the point of the app, I can imagine. So it's a very noble gesture to help other people find craft beer. But for the most part, people just want the sort of notoriety or the chit. They want the thing. They want the accolades, right? So they get the thing, but they hate the beer. So they get the thing anyway, even though they hate the beer. And I don't know, man. It's not my vibe, but this beer is good. I like it.
If we look at anything, we look at Google like reviews, because at least Google kind of like, you can go shitpost somebody on Yelp or Untappd or whatever it is and never have touched the, you know, their product or been in their deal. But at least Google, you have to like go in there. And so that's where I look at. That's where I get like, as a business owner, if I get a lower review than 5 stars, that's where I'm looking at being like, what is this person saying? Like, or if they don't leave a comment, like we'll say like, hey, you know, what can we do to get 5? Like, what is it that made you leave this review? Like, oh, okay, this is what you're saying. Like, this is, then we can react. We can bring that in and we can go off of that, because at least we know that person was geolocated in our brewery, that we know they went there in order for them to leave a review. And you know, that's where we go off of as far as like sort of social media, you know, reviews of the brewery, because they haven't gone more. In. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, boys. Well, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate your time and sending the beers. I think they're all tasting really good, and they're definitely very unique. You guys are definitely putting your own spin on the styles, and that new hop, man, it's good stuff.
Don't
I like
tell anybody.
That.
Nobody listens to this thing, right?
No, but bro, I don't even. I'm basically just ripping Justin off. I haven't published a show in a year and a half.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just getting paid, and hopefully he doesn't notice because he's busy running the bar and whatever. So it's fine. CrusaderBrewing.com. You guys check them out. Go there. If you're in the Bakersfield area, definitely go check them out too and hang out and buy a bunch of merch and buy a bunch of beer, even more importantly. And, you know, support the boys over there at CrusaderBrewing.com. Chris, Bailey, thank you very much for joining the show. I appreciate it.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. That's where you're going to find out what we're doing and what we got going on. So,
at Crusader Brewing.
Yeah, we made it really difficult. So.
Well, that's what you got to do, man. That's what social media is all about. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Really appreciate it. And until next time, we'll see you later.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity can.